When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Conroy. Albert Breer's here. Albert, I'm incredibly sore from an adult track meet.
They have those?
Yes.
I'm trying to think. I've seen adult soccer, which actually gets really. Our town, they rent out the field when they're not using it. The high school does. They rent out the field. So we actually, the youth football, we have to rent it from the high school, which is really annoying.
That's great.
But on Sunday morning, which doesn't make any sense, right? But
sounds like a land baron deal, but yeah.
So before we're on it on Sunday mornings this year, there was a like FC Celtic or something like that. Like all these guys with thick accents and like they were getting after each other. It was like trash talking and not good natured trash talking out there, like the thick accents. That was super intense. And I haven't witnessed it myself. I've heard men's league hockey gets really, really bad too.
There was a friend of mine here necessitated the requirement of CBD in order to heal from a hard hit that he took in men's league hockey. So. Yeah, it's intense.
I wouldn't think a track meet, huh? What events did you do? Did they have like the field events too, or was it just track?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it was track and field.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you and I are both like hobby joggers. You know, like I enjoy running longer distances mostly as a way to just clear your head after a long day or before a day. But running the 100-meter dash and the 4x1 relay
it's a totally different muscles. Like that's the thing.
36-year-old man was, and it was funny too because there was a bunch of us that went, and we all know each other from running in town, and we go to different events together and stuff. And it just looked like there was this hidden sniper in the sky, just shooting people in the hamstring because like one race after another, halfway through, it'd be like, ah. And then everyone would pull up and I was just terrified because I like to run. That's just like my escape. You know what I mean? And I was like, I just want to leave with my hamstrings intact. And it was close. But I will say this. I was so impressed. I went over to do the shot put and I picked up an 8-pound shot put and I was like, good God, this is heavy. And the guy goes, well, I hate to tell you that in your age group, you guys are doing a 12. And so I'm holding this thing and it's like heavier than my newborn son. And I'm like, how am I going to throw this thing? And the people in front of me, men and women, both who were champion high school shot putters and javelin throwers and stuff, that, how is that? It's not a muscle that leaves your body. Like they can still do it perfectly. Like
I threw the javelin in high school.
Can you still do it? If I put a javelin into your hand right now,
it's very similar to, I feel like the way you're taught to do it, similar to throwing a football.
Okay.
So it wasn't like, it's not an unnatural motion. It's just when you're throwing it, as I remember it, when you're throwing it, you have to have really good form. Like that's what it is. Like it's not so much your throwing power as it is your form has to be really, really good. You know? Like, it might actually be a good exercise for quarterbacks. Because if you think about it, it forces you to focus on your form, and how the javelin comes off your hand is going to be dependent on your form. So, yeah. I don't know. There's an idea for you, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, just pick up a big spear. kind of
like how like Nolan Ryan used to warm up throwing a football.
Yeah. You
remember that? Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you do?
Terrible. But, yeah. You know, the thing is, there's like these dudes, just like big dudes, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like big dudes can just throw things really far, you know? Uh-huh. And so it was a humbling experience. I'm glad I did it though. It was fun. You know, it was a good,
who organized that?
We do it like in our town. And so we live on a lake, and then we compete against all the other, there's like six lakes in our town. And so we all compete against each other.
So like each lake has a team?
Each lake has a team. Yeah. Yeah, so we all get after it. The 4x1 was funny because we got to run it with, the age group was 18 plus, right? So
okay.
We got to run it with a couple of kids from high school, and they were the
first.
We
were probably just smoking everybody, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So they were the first, they were the anchor leg, and they were the lead leg, and then they'd throw the slow old guys in the middle. And they, you know, the kid who was running anchor for us was like, you know, just try to get me a little bit of cushion. And I was like, it's so funny because you don't even think about it until, you know, you're standing way at the end of the track and the race starts, and then you're watching everything come towards you. And then this moment, it hits you where you say, I've never done this in my life, and I have no idea what's about to happen.
I've run a relay too, like the baton thing's tricky.
I know. And then I turned around, I like looked at someone next to me, and I was like, sir, when can I start running? And he's like, I would go now. And I'm like, okay, you know. Yeah. And then you just like get out of there.
That's great. Like, because so were the 18-year-olds, did they have to live on those lakes, or were they ringers?
No, they have to live there. And okay. I will say that, like, it is,
because like it would be unfair if like one lake had like a disproportionate amount of 18-year-olds, you know what I mean?
Yes, that's true too. Yeah. I would say everybody kind of had their strengths, but to your point, we talked about that with AAU sports a long time ago. Like it removes that town to town rivalry thing, and that's still very much alive and well where we are, which is
I like it,
which is
I like
fun. It. But
yeah, I actually had a similar hamstring situation when I during youth football, like OTAs, we bring the kids out for 3 days in the spring. I think I told you about this, and put them through everything and all of that, and just show them like kind of like what football drills are, because it's not what they think it is if they haven't played before. We did like a high knees drill where you go and, you know, you run through bags and high point the ball. And so I demonstrated, and I thought I did okay. I got through it, and I felt like I got punched in the back of my leg. Like it was just like, it's like I did it once, and it was like yanked hamstring. Like, just, it's amazing how fragile you are. You know what I mean?
This is oddly the
like
perfect
goddamn
segue.
China doll.
Yeah. This is oddly the perfect segue, Albert, into talking about Aaron Rodgers. And we're gonna do a mailbag episode this week. Yep. And so we'll dig deep into Albert's mailbag. But I want to lead off. Obviously, I mean, we've been talking about Aaron Rodgers for the last week. It actually kind of happened probably almost immediately after we recorded our last podcast. We haven't had a chance to weigh in on it. Aaron Rodgers is a 40-year-old, and I don't think that it's a big deal on its face that he is not at mandatory minicamp. However, I've had a lot of time to sit and think about this, and this to me has to have registered as one of the biggest unforced errors in recent memory. And it stinks to be the Jets. I get it. You're playing by a different set of rules where you're constantly having to battle against a prior perception that has nothing to do with you or with anybody there.
And builds on itself.
But like through and through, this had to be like, there are so many choices that were made to get us to the point where now this is an issue. And I don't really, you know, Aaron can come back and say whatever he wants. I have a feeling that where he is, he probably could have gone another time, you know, I don't know that for sure, but it's one of these things where, you know, what kind of drop passes, like we remember how difficult it was for him to get on the same page with the post Devontae Adams receivers in Green Bay. And what if that happens again? Because we don't know. We don't know what his relationship is with the Jets guys, you know?
So I will tell you one thing I think that they were fine with, and the other thing that I think that they should have done differently. Which one do you want first?
I want the thing that they were fine with.
I have talked to more people, and I don't mind their logic in not moving the mini camp. And here's the reason why. I don't think there's that big a difference between the OTA practice. For somebody like Aaron, who doesn't need to be in the building 12 hours a day, I think as long as he's out there on the field with his teammates, it's mostly fine. I think what so this was explained to me that I think it's a really interesting nuance to it. So some teams do the mini camp the last week of the offseason programs. Other teams do it the second to last week of the offseason program. I guess what ends up happening in a lot of cases is if you move it to the second to last week of the offseason program, you put those OTAs on the last week, and a lot of veterans just leave and just get out of town. And so I think the idea here was Aaron needs this less than those other guys do. Aaron needs the full 9 weeks. Aaron needs the full 9 weeks less than the other 89 guys on the roster do. And so, yes, if we move the mini camp up, then we have Aaron for the mini camp, but then we might lose 30 guys for that last week of the offseason program.
Right.
Whereas if we just go with it as it is, we'll have Aaron and everybody else through the first 8 weeks of the offseason program. And then the last week we have the full squad mini camp where we have everybody but Aaron. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the math of it, I think, like that part of it, the more I sort of asked around, and this happens across the league, where if you do put that mini camp on the second to last week, you risk losing a lot of the older guys who just look at it like, okay, that's the end of the offseason program. I don't really need these last couple of OTAs. I'm going to get out of town early, right? So that's the part I don't have a problem with. The one thing I think they could have done differently is just managing the perception of it. And I think after last year, maybe people there might be a little bit to the point where they're like, we're going to get killed anyway. So what, you know what I mean? But I still do think like that part of it, I really wish Aaron had just spoke for himself on this. You know what I mean? And people can say like, that doesn't matter. That's just about you and the media. It really isn't just about us and the media. It's really, if a guy in that sort of position does something like that that's going to make news and then isn't there to answer for it, who has to answer for it? Everyone else.
Right.
So now you have 24, 25, 26-year-old teammates who have to explain it, who have to talk about it, who have to avoid overstepping their bounds with it. It's just that part of it, I think. I would have liked it if Aaron had come out and explained it. And I don't care where he does it, whether it's at the podium or on McAfee or whatever else. Do it however you want to do it. You know what I mean? But I think like this thing would have been less of a big deal if he personally had gotten out in front of it. And he has a ton of different channels to do that. That way, I think he would have taken the heat off of everybody else in the building.
In hindsight, like I had thought about this more than I should have. But the... I have a lot of respect for Robert Saleh in particular, because he could have very easily gone out there and lied and said, it's an excused absence. This is something, you know, we knew about for a long time, you know, and we didn't talk about it before because we're respecting Aaron's privacy and we ask that you guys do it too. Yeah. Right. Okay. Perfect. You know, nobody knows, none the wiser. Now, what I'm guessing he was concerned about is the trickle down effect for other players who know where he is and who know that he's maybe possibly just willingly skipping a mandatory practice. And, you know, instead of just pacifying the quarterback in public, you are going out and saying, I think the words were, this is important to him. Right. Yeah. And he said, you know, that this is an unexcused absence. Right. And you can argue that that started the snowball rolling downhill, right? Everybody yep. trying to figure out where he is. Everybody trying to figure out whether it was a valid excuse. All that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And I don't know. Again, I agree with Sauce Gardner, who said, you know, do we really think it's that big of a deal that a three-time league MVP isn't going to be at two practices? No. But I'll tell this story because I think this represents the other side of it. I was recently at a place where I'm working on a story, and I was talking to a wide receiver about his quarterback. And the wide receiver said, I tried to beat him into the facility just to see if I could do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So every day for 2 weeks, I woke up at all hours of the night. And this wide receiver is like, I have a lot of problems sleeping regularly. So I would come in at 3:30 in the morning. I would come in at 4:30 in the morning. I would come in at 3:45 in the morning. Every single time I came mm-hmm. into the building, he was there. I couldn't beat him there. His car was the only car yep. in the parking lot. And the player said to me, we had this big win last year, and I looked at my quarterback, borderline tears in my eyes, and I just said, you have no idea how proud I am of you because I know what you put into it. That's what you're giving up. Right. You know what I mean? Like that's what you're giving up if you're
Aaron. Can I give you a good story that'll back you up there?
Yeah.
So this is about 15 years ago when the Patriots were coming off their undefeated season. And I had Belichick one-on-one for an hour. This is the summer of 08, right before Brady got hurt. And this was before Brady bought the house out in LA. And this is when very famously, he was like winning the parking spot for the off-season program. There's parking spots they gave to the off-season program winners that were right next to the entrance of the facility. And he won the parking spot every year, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, I asked Bill, we had talked about Brady and Lawrence Taylor, right? And then, you know, the kind of what it's like to have coached those two. And this is when Brady still, at that point, he was just 30 years old, right? And I said, so then what's it like for you to have your best player be your hardest worker? And he looked at me, he paused, and he said, it's exactly what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Yeah.
Nothing else. You know what I mean? Like, and then I think about like this story. I remember when Luke Kuechly was playing great, right? Like when Luke Kuechly was, playing about as high a level of linebacker as anybody's ever played. And there were a few years there before he had the concussion issues where he was. And I remember, you know, Sean McDermott was the defensive coordinator there. And McDermott would say the same thing you're saying, which is like, he's like, it's unbelievable. Like I pull into the building. It doesn't matter when his truck is there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so you hear all these stories and you know, it sounds like, oh, well, this is just a hard, it's like, it's not a hardo. It's a guy who like really does care. And on top of that, like there's an implicit pressure that brings to everybody else. It lifts everybody up. You know right. what I mean? Like it's with, you know, going back to Brady, it was like, I remember Josh McDaniels and Bill O'Brien and talking to those guys about the pressure that they would feel. Adam Gase with Peyton Manning too. The pressure they would feel going into a meeting with those guys because they had to give those guys something they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Something they didn't already know and how hard it was to get to that point, you know? So these things matter with quarterbacks. These things matter with your best players. So I'm with you on that.
It's hard, right? Because I am one of these people that, you know, I talk about this all the time. I think that there is a martyrdom that's associated with the position that's absolutely ridiculous and out yeah. of control. And I think Andrew Luck touched on it a lot when he gave his first post-career comments to ESPN. You have to give all of yourself and you have to expect that. And so I don't mind on its face a player being like, listen, dude, I have this truncated offseason. I have this opportunity to do something that's cool for me that's going to be better for my mental health. And Saleh had alluded to that, right?
Yeah.
Do you take your time in the offseason to build an advantage for yourself or not? And maybe this is something that Aaron needs in particular. So on one hand, I struggle with this thing because I'm like, good for you. Good for you not caring yeah. what anybody else thinks, doing what you want. But on the other hand, there's this part of me that's like, you were... You know, you've always said, I'm not here to be the savior. I'm not here to be the savior, but you act like it, right? And you yeah. come in and you say things like all the bull crap that's not, doesn't have anything to do with winning. We need to cut it out, all that stuff. But most of the bull crap has been, I hate saying bull crap. I don't say that. I say that around my
kids. No one actually says that, yeah.
I know. But most of that stuff has been related to Aaron since he's been there, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's this weird thing where, like, he wants to have it all both ways, and I just don't think it's possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's somebody who, like, you talk about, I don't want to be treated like the savior, but somebody who's taken full advantage of being that. You know what I mean? Like, because there's that whole thing, like, it's like one of the credos of quarterbacking is, if something goes wrong, it's we. Or if something goes wrong, it's me. If something goes right, it's we.
Right?
Like, so, like, there's sort of that agreement that you have. Like, that's where I think Russell Wilson struggled. You know, like, I think Russell Wilson really, that's what created problems for him. I would say this in Aaron's defense. The one thing I respect about Aaron that I think is really important, because he's obviously a complicated guy, right? What I really respect is what you hit on, which is, I don't think he cares what anybody thinks. Like, I think he's sensitive about certain things, but just as far as how he's perceived, I'm not sure that he really cares as much about that as most other guys. So I don't think he's busy managing his image the same way other quarterbacks are, and some other great quarterbacks are. And I also, the one thing I've noticed about him, and this really hit me last year and kind of looking at it, he always punches up. He never punches down.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he never has, like, his teammates, like, are almost always on board with him. His teammates love him. And then you talk to, like, the people he had problems with in Green Bay were, like, the general manager and the team president, right? Like, he's not one of these guys who you'll hear, like something horrible happened with, like, a trainer or something. Like, you won't hear that with him, you know? Like, everybody really, the people who are below him really love him. So that part of it I can respect, too, is just he is who he is, and when he's got an issue with someone or something, he swings up, not down. So anyway, we could do a whole episode on the psyche of Aaron Rodgers here, which could be in an altered state or something. I don't know.
Now he's really swinging up, right? At the United States government and the deep state, you know? And so to really give that away.
He really is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ultimately.
Yep.
Ultimately doing it. I mean, listen, there's nothing, ultimately, this is how it works. And I think he understands it. And it is cool that you don't care, because if you don't care, this doesn't matter. But if you do care, here's how this is going to go. You go out and you win your first two or three games of the season, you're 3-1, and it doesn't matter, right? If you're 1-3, and remember, that schedule is a bear, you know?
Yeah.
If you're 1-3 and the only guy that you're connecting with is Garrett Wilson, and you got a rookie wide receiver that's going to have to take some valuable snaps, and what happens if Mike Williams gets hurt and blah, 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 blah. Like, remember, guys, this is not a super deep wide receiving core. If all that happens, you know, do we go back to this moment and do we say, could have helped to have an extra 2 or 3 days of practice? I don't know. Let's move on to some mailbag questions. This one I really liked because, I mean, you do this every year. You have this running document of when starting quarterbacks start. And
I'm going to send you the updated one. I'm gonna text it to you right now so you have it in front of you.
And there's always this idea that, yeah, we're going to sit and we're going to be patient. But the Packers have now done this twice in a row and replicated their success. The Chiefs have now done it and have confirmed that success. I think in a backdoor way, all these other quarterbacks that we have, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith, having some of the best years of their life deep into their 20s, confirms that idea that, you know, maybe you shouldn't start right away. Do you think, because there's going to be Penix, you would assume is going to sit by design, unless, God forbid, there's an injury to Kirk Cousins, and you never want to wish that on anybody.
And the crazy thing is Penix is probably the most pro-ready of them.
Which is weird, right? I mean, he's got the most college starts, right?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. But, you know, Bo Nix is in a legitimate three-way quarterback competition. And Sean Payton doesn't have time. I don't think optically he can handle getting his rocks blown out this season. You know? I mean, that's going to be a bad look for him. The Vikings, right? You have Sam Darnold, who's really familiar with an offense that Kevin O'Connell is going to try to run for him. He's probably got the leg up in that competition. So do you think that this year is going to be any different than previous years?
So I think the first two are going to start week one. Well, we already know who Caleb is.
Right.
Like, and every single sign, signal, whatever you want to call it, that Jaden Daniels is going to be the starter in Washington. So right. Those two, take those two, move those two aside. Drake May is an interesting one because I think he could use like a little retooling. He's wildly talented, but raw. So he's sort of like, I feel like he's sort of like the prototype for the guy who might really be able to use the year, you know, and have the extra year to sit and kind of let some of the changes that they're making mechanically set in. And then I think with JJ, I really believe in Kevin O'Connell's ability to develop quarterbacks.
Like sure.
I really do. And, you know, there's part of me that thinks they're going to get a really good year out of Sam Darnold.
I do too.
I really like, and so like I asked a couple people there about this. Did you watch the very end of the Christmas night game?
Oh boy.
The Ravens Niners game. The Ravens blew them out. And I would implore anybody to go back and watch the last 10 minutes of that game. Because obviously the game was over, doesn't mean anything, blah, blah, blah. Sam Darnold looks like a different quarterback. Like, and I know it's garbage time and all that, right? But this is Sam Darnold in the context of a Kyle Shanahan offense. And I just think like the speed with which he was playing and how he was making decisions and all of that different stuff to me was fascinating to watch it. So I asked a couple guys with the Vikings about that and they were like, yeah, we saw that too. So I'm interested to see if there could be like and he played pretty well for the Panthers at the end of the year, the year before too, you know? So I'm sort of wondering if there's like, could there be a Geno resurgence there with Sam, where Sam can keep JJ McCarthy on the bench for a year?
Why not? Like, that's not a bad thing, you know?
No, it's not a bad result. I think what's interesting about them and the Broncos is you have guys who are top three picks on the depth chart there. So these guys are coming in, right? McCarthy and Wilson. Or McCarthy and Nix, and it's not automatic that they're the most talented quarterback in the roster the way it often is with first-round picks, you know?
Right.
And then I think you look at the dynamics in a couple of the other places. So with Penix and with Nix, like they really have to get those right because for the next 2 years, for different reasons, those teams are not going to have the benefit of the quarterback on the rookie contract because they have the dead money in Denver for Russell Wilson, and they have Kirk Cousins on the books in Atlanta. So I just think that there are more complicating factors this year. I would say, though, the first two guys start. I'd set the over-under maybe mid-November for Drake May becoming the starter in New England because I think they're going to get pushed to the point where they want to see what they have and get him rolling for year two.
Yeah.
I think Penix sits the whole year. I think Nix starts early. Would be my guess. He's another high-volume college guy, right? I think it was 61 starts. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then I think J.J. McCarthy, I think Sam Darnold plays well enough to keep him on the bench most of the season.
It is interesting that you think about – here's the one part of this that I don't think we've really talked about, that we've really discussed, right?
Yeah.
What if – because Jaden Daniels didn't come out of nowhere, but he had a really good season last year and then played his way into that. I don't know if anybody really thought Michael Penix or Bo Nix or even J.J. McCarthy were going to be in that realm, right?
I would say McCarthy and Nix more than Penix. A lot of people thought Penix coming into the year was like a third-round pick.
Right.
Like, that was the sense I got from teams and that, like, I think McCarthy was like, wait and see. Right. And then Nix was like, I had a couple of people tell me like, yeah, you know, with Nix, it ended so badly at Auburn that like they had the great year at Oregon, but it's like, let's see him do it again now that his offensive coordinator's left.
And he did.
Set
the college, at the NCAA completion percentage record.
Right.
What if that happens again and you're Denver and you spent the first round pick on Knicks when you need it for just about everything else, right?
Right.
And he's not a market upgrade. And, you know, we can always go down these, you know, dark hypotheticals. Yeah. You know, you could do this with anything. But with Denver, Atlanta, and Minnesota in particular, yep. what happens if we have four legit dudes again next year? And I maybe part of the calculation is these guys looking at it being like, if Shedeur Sanders is the top pick, I'm not playing ball. You know, this is not what I want to do, you know? Yeah. But what if there's a bunch of dudes? Like, what if it happens again? And then you're stuck with, you know, a guy that you drafted because you were afraid of what the unknown was going to look like. You know what I mean?
I know. And that, like, so you're saying like almost like a Kyler situation.
Yeah.
And like, I always feel like in those sorts of spots, it's like, you just got to do, like,
you just got to pick the other quarterback.
You got to
right?
like, yeah. you got to figure it out. Like, right. figure it out. Like, if that next guy is like, is markedly better, you just got to grit your teeth, take the criticism and do it, you know? Because, yeah. you know, whether that's Shedeur Sanders, Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck, I'm just trying to think of who else would be out there. Like, there are a few names, like, of guys that could play their way into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's
so, yeah, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. I could one of these teams be in that spot? Yeah.
Like, what if that's, what if we get dudes, Albert? What if we get a whole new year of dudes? You know?
Yeah. Look out for Will Howard at Ohio State.
I'm my 100.
Puts it all together.
Mm.
Huh?
We took with Syracuse. We're starting an Ohio State quarterback this
year. Kyle McCord. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping that there's no.
So, yeah, his nickname at Ohio State, not for nice reasons. So, you know, they had Maserati Marf, right?
Yes.
They called Kyle Honda McCord, which wasn't.
I just hope if we're forgetting someone from Ohio State, I'm just worried about subsequently there would be some sort of NCAA sanctions that we're going to have to get done, you know.
No. It's all above board now. Everything's nice and legal. That's what's great is like, even after they won the national title, Michigan fans, when we get like a big recruiter, still like, see, they're paying everybody. Yep. Yep, we are.
Sure thing.
Yeah. So, feels good for that stuff to be out in the open now. But yeah, I think like this is, to me, like this is as interesting a group, like the six quarterbacks, this is as interesting a group as we've had in a while because they're just such different circumstances, each of the cases. You know what I mean? Like they each sort of have their own unique twist, you know, to the situation the guy's walking into.
Another great question we got from Sean Matheson. Albert, does the Brandon Ayuk deal get done? I think that once we're at the stage where the contract figures are leaked, which is sort of the ultimate, that's the ultimate chess move on behalf of the team. Yeah. And I would be wary of that if you're a fan. Never side with ownership because you don't know the details of the contract and the intricacies of it. But, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing that the figures are leaked.
See, that's a Jedi mind trick that the owners have, though, is that, like, the fans don't think they're siding with ownership. They think they're siding with the team.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the Jedi mind trick right there.
It is, and it's unbelievable when owners are the source of all acrimony and issue in most acrimony and issue in
that
in
part's NFL. Not them, but all the winning is
right. But I remember that this happened with Aaron Judge in New York, right? And he was very, very close. They were, you know, going back and forth in free agency, and then the Yankees leaked. Well, hey, he turned down a $300 million contract, and then all of a sudden, talk radio gets lit on fire. This guy, like, how could you?
Greedy,
what? Yeah, what? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So with Ayuk, it's like, okay, he turned down $26 million. Now, everybody else will come into the conversation and say, well, what, does Brandon Ayuk think he's better than Amon-Ra St. Brown? And is this but I don't know. Are you optimistic?
I don't know. Weren't you... When I saw, I think it was Silver reported that, right?
Yeah. And Silver's the best. I don't mean
Silver's.
Yeah,
love Silver. Silver's great. But like, I that made me more confident, not less confident, that the deal was going to get done.
I do too, because I think it's just part
of the. That's close.
It's part of the imagination.
That's not that far off.
Right. Yeah. If you've already got him to there.
I mean, if we were talking like T. Higgins, like you heard the number was like around 20, and it's like, okay, like that's not getting done, you know?
Right.
Like Ayuk, it's like 26, and then like Waddle and St. Brown, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, were between 28 and 29. You're not far off.
No.
Like, I think like if Ayuk, if you can get to 29, could it get done? You know? And yeah, like it just makes me think that this is going to get done, you know? And look, like I think that makes things more interesting too, because I think then if Ayuk gets signed and he's like, and the reason they would sign him over, you know, they would sign him in this situation where they're paying so many other people is because he's the one guy, he's like a true number one receiver who can beat man coverage and all those things. Now, all of a sudden, you got a chance to field phone calls on Deebo Samuel. Right. And I don't think they'll get, like, I think their preference is to keep Deebo on the team and go all in and win a championship this year. But if you call offering a first round pick, if the Jets call offering a first round pick, like, you know, like that's probably pretty hard to turn down.
I agree. I think that now what's interesting here, if you're Deebo, is that probably not purposely, but the selection of another first round wide receiver,
yep,
and inviting him into the fold puts pretty much like a 7-week regular season timeline where you could deal one of these guys before the deadline, right? If yep. they don't get dealt now. So you could deal them before the trade deadline. There are now, like, how many of Kyle Shanahan's former offensive assistants are now running football teams and could probably take Brandon Ayuk and plug them right in and have somewhat immediate success with them? I mean, there's probably what? Yeah.
A lot. I mean, you got to count the McVay trade and too.
Count the right? McVay like, guys. Like they would all be able to do that. Now it's the run game is different there, but I think that the way that they view the pass.
Although,
is,
like
is
I'm
similar,
kind of know? Going through in my head, most of those teams are like just stocked with receivers. You know, like,
but for
like
example,
Miami, the Rams.
Perfect yeah, example: yeah. the Saints. Right? You have the Saints,
you
right?
Go.
Where
you, go,
you
yeah.
have Clint Kubiak in his first year as an offensive coordinator. You have a really yeah. easy, you know, beginning of the schedule for the Saints. So let's say you start the season 3-1, and then all of a sudden, you face some adversity. You're limping into the trade deadline. What yep. better way to fire everybody up than to bring in Brandon Ayuk? And you need that other wide receiver. Now, who knows what their cap situation is at this point, but whether they can actually legitimately get that done. But there are a lot of options for these two guys in particular. And I'm wondering if you're Brandon Ayuk, and I hate to say take less money. I hate to say it. But if you want to be there, if that's your preference, and you're yeah. fighting over like $2 million a year at this point, and prestige, and whatever it is, if you're fighting over that, and you know that there's Ricky Pearsall there, you know that Kyle yeah. hand evaluates the wide receivers, you know, do you just kind of rush to get this thing into the books? Because the downside of that is you could end up somewhere else in November as a 6-month, as a 3-month rental.
Where you don't want to be.
Where you don't yeah. want to be. And you're not with the 49ers, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like the hard thing about that is that they did pay Nick Bosa at the top of the market. They did once upon a time pay George Kittle at the top of the market. They did go there with Deebo Samuel.
Right.
And they gave Christian, like, I actually think like the Christian McCaffrey thing, which had been quietly hanging over their head for most of the offseason, I think that was done like with the, like, we got to get this one done before we do Ayuk, you
right.
know? So I still think like, I think Ayuk would at least on paper like to be paid, not like Justin Jefferson necessarily, but I mean, acknowledging that he's like 100% in that group with St. Brown and with Waddle, and maybe with a little bit of a tax for waiting. You know what I mean? Like, whereas like Waddle or St. Brown probably would have gotten a little bit more had they got paid after Jefferson. Maybe Ayuk and his people look for a little bit of a tax because they did wait.
Another interesting mailbag question that you got as it relates to the wide receiver position is yeah. when do you believe that the Bengals will extend Ja'Marr Chase? I have a little bit of an interesting take on this.
Right.
And I'm curious your thought. Again, this is going to sound... Did you ever watch It's a Wonderful Life? You know the Christmas movie?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched bits and pieces. I will admit here that I've never watched it all the way through. It's always on in the background of the house, though, on Christmas.
Okay.
Well, I guess not anymore that the NFL stole Christmas from everybody, but...
Right. I'm still watching It's a Wonderful Life on Christmas. Pick your okay, so if it's not Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life, pick your typical evil money grubbing businessman, whatever, whoever that is, right? Okay. So I hate to sound like that guy, right?
Mr. Burns,
yeah. Excellent. But Justin Jefferson set that bar. And so if you're the Bengals, you know that that's about where you're going to have to go, right? In that neighborhood, maybe plus 100,000 or 200,000 or whatever it is to top it or whatever Jamar Chase wants to do. What is the rush now if you're Cincinnati to do that? Because you already know how much it's going to cost, and that number is not going to change if Jamar Chase has an excellent year this year.
Yeah.
But it is going to change, Albert, if he doesn't have a good year this year, or if he gets hurt, or all that kind of stuff. And I understand that the Bengals are almost like the Jets, battling against an optic from a long ago time that they've really done a great job of reversing in modern era. You know, they spend a lot in free agency. They re-signed Joe Burrow. They sold the naming rights to the stadium to generate more capital. They're doing all that stuff. However, outside of making sure that everything's hunky-dory and everybody's happy, you know, if you're the team, what is moving you off your chair to do that right now? Because that deal is not going to change. Nobody's topping Justin Jefferson.
Here's what would for me. It's the opportunity to manage the dollars going forward, because Jamar Chase is going to be on my roster for the next half decade. And because he is linked with Joe Burrow.
Right.
And the money that you have sunk into this year is already a sunk cost. Right. Like, so like that money's already there. The cap is already set up. So like whatever you have saved already from this year, that's gone, because that's already been spent. Right. So one way or the other, you're going to have to pay this money, and you're going to have to give him the big contract. So why not do it now, so you can manage it with 2 years left on the contract? If you are 100% certain that he's going to be the same player at 30 that he is at, what is he now? 24. Which I would feel pretty good about that based on the way that he's produced and the way that receivers typically hold up, especially like a bigger guy like Mike Evans, AJ Brown, those guys, like, I think typically those guys hold up, you know. I just think Jamar Chase, I would do it because like I don't see a huge benefit in saving the money now. And I think you lose the ability to manage it over that extra year, where you can spread the cap hits out and have just better numbers across the board, which is, you know, what Miami did with Jalen Waddle and what, you know, the Eagles did with Devontae Smith, the two guys who were drafted right behind him.
Boy, Jamar Chase was born March 1st.
Don't do this.
2000. So Jamar Chase was born...
He just turned 24.
Jamar Chase was born 3 months after I spent a sleepless night in my Scranton, Pennsylvania area bedroom, worried that the world was going to come to an end because the computers were going to turn from 99 to 00.
So he was born in the back half of my sophomore year in college. That makes me feel awesome.
What?
Yeah.
Damn.
I graduated high school in 98.
Golly.
Yep. Yeah. So that would have been, what was it? Was it early March? It would have been right around spring break of my sophomore year in college.
So Jamar Chase was born and Albert was on MTV spring break.
I was in Panama City, I think, that year. Yeah.
Yeah. You were doing the, doing the slip and slide and all that good stuff.
Does Panama City still exist? Like, is it still... I think that whole area is like really nice now. Like, it wasn't back then. It was it was a sketchy area back then.
We did Ocean City, Maryland. That was it.
Nice.
We used to stay at this place
for spring break, though. Isn't it a little cold?
Well, it doesn't matter. You're 19, you're 20, and you're just drinking in a hotel room.
Did girls go there though?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
So at least we knew, you know, and then we used to stay at this motel that was named after a seafaring bird. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. And then we used to we used to just give the staff, we used to pay we used to buy cartons of cigarettes to give to the staff so then they would ignore the drinking.
I've got an unbelievable spring break story that involves, you know, one of those situations where you jam like 12 guys into a hotel room. And suffice it to say, we did get busted and we had to pay off the person in the the guy at the front desk not to run it up the flagpole to management or the police. And a palm tree might have wound up in their pool. Potted palm trees are a thing in Florida, you know. So yeah, that was before we got on a spring break cruise to Cozumel and Cancun that, like, my buddy said he had a great deal on that, like, wound up being, I mean, it was a very interesting experience.
So it's interesting, like, this is a weird detour, but I was talking about this with a friend the other day. So I remember being like 10 or whatever, how old I was when, I was 12 in 2000 when you were MTV spring breaking. And I remember like watching that on TV, right? And thinking like, this is what my life is going to be like. How awesome is that? You know, and then you would see the clips from like Woodstock 99 and like all this kind of like massive, super.
I felt like the documentaries of Woodstock 99 were an assault on my generation. like one of them, I can't remember. It might have been like the HBO one, like where it was like it drew like a straight line from like Woodstock attending. And I wasn't at Woodstock 99, but
allegedly
it drew a straight line from attending Woodstock 99 to being like at like, you know, in Charlottesville and like like what? It was just unbelievable. Like all Limp Bizkit people became like, you know, January 6th people. It was weird logic there.
Albert was the one who's...
And again, like a full assault on my generation.
Just so everyone knows, Albert was the one who started the fire at the end of Woodstock. And he's still, it's going to take some time for him before he's ready to admit that.
Still processing.
But I just remember being like 10 and being like, whoa. And that was you. You were living that life. And then it changed. Like, I feel like you guys might have been the last ones to truly enjoy this sort of unencumbered experience. And then once
like
it was
whatever happens happens.
And then it horrified because, you know, my mom would walk in and she'd be like, what is that on TV? Turn that off. You're not doing that. You know, and then, you had to get a little bit. You had to go a little bit more clandestine. You had to take more precautions. You had to do all this kind of stuff. My one buddy, the one guy had all the alcohol in his car. So there was like five cars that went down. One guy had all the alcohol because his older brother got it for him. They got pulled over on 95 South on the way to the beach. And then the police didn't arrest them, but made them dump out every single can into like a gutter on the side of the highway. And, you know, it's just...
See, that's a cool cop.
That is a cool cop, and it's like, hey, I gotta let you're gonna learn the
like,
lesson.
I can't let you drive away with this, but like, I'm also not gonna bust your balls over.
But it was wild because it's like it feels old Western because you're waiting for like the stagecoach to arrive, you know, in town, and you're just like, where are the provisions, you know? And then all of a sudden, the car comes and there's no alcohol in it, and then everybody fights, and you know, it's very.
You know what I think changes? Camera phones.
Yeah.
I really think that's.
I mean, we had like the granular.
I mean, people like my age, I've had this conversation with dozens and dozens of people over like how horrifying it would have been to like walk into a bar at 20 years old and knowing everybody's got a camera in their pocket.
Right.
Like we didn't deal with that.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. And even like the digital cameras, it was like it was almost like pulling a weapon, like you could see the whole thing, and so you could
silver. They were like this like reflective silver, so like when it came out of somebody's pocket, it was like
it had like a tactical flashlight level flash on it, so that it was all right, let's get this back on the rails, and we'll do one more quick one because I'm reading your mailbag and someone said when will Kenny Pickett take the Eagles starting quarterback job, which I really enjoyed. We're not gonna do that one. Let's see. We got one on Rashi Rice suspensions. We've got one on a division of international teams, which I don't really like. Oh, let's do Trevor Lawrence. Okay, so here's my last takeaway, and I'm curious what you thought. Big deal. I'm sort of blown away by how many Jaguars fans out there are or like just football fans who were fighting with me and saying, why does he deserve that contract? And I would just be like, are you, what am I missing? Like, I think he definitely deserved the contract. My issue is, and this is what I wrote, is like, who's going to step up around him? Because, you know, we haven't gotten much out of the first overall pick. Travon Walker, this has been 2 years now. We're on our second defensive coordinator. Doug Peterson's kind of doing the same thing he did in Philly, where he doesn't want to change the offensive staff over, wants to keep the continuity. Yep. You know, are we headed down a path where Trevor Lawrence is a lot like Justin Herbert, where we're like, my goodness, this guy is special, but what the hell are they going to do to make it work?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the conclusion was with the contract was, we still think he is who we thought he was.
And if you don't do it now, he's going to cost $60 million.
Yeah, if you don't do it now and he has a great year, then that's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
I think it's too often we are unable to divorce a quarterback from a situation.
Right.
And like if you look at Trevor's 3 years in the league, his first year was like, I mean, one of the biggest disasters in NFL history. Is it fair to say that?
Yes.
Like, what, I mean, I'm talking about what was going on around him. It was like one of the biggest disasters in NFL history. So I think with a lot of young quarterbacks, it would probably take like 2 years to rewire the guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Then he comes back the next year with Doug Peterson, and he has one of the greatest comebacks in playoff history.
Right.
And then in year three, he has some bumps. I'm like, I have a hard time really faulting him for his trajectory as a pro.
Right.
You know? I mean, I think like he's fine. I think now, like, I think the question is going to become is he who we made him out to be, which is, you know, being on that Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, John Elway tier prospect. And if that's the question, then I don't know. I'm not sure if he's going to get there, if he's going to get to the level that we all thought he was going to get to. To me, like, the dividing line is, are you the kind of quarterback who can win a championship if everything's right around you? Or are you the type of guy who is going to give like his team like a baseline of 11 wins no matter what, is going to be the championship game like every year, and is going to win Super Bowls along the way, which is Brady and Mahomes.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's, I mean, what I'm saying. There's only two of those guys, you know?
You know what I mean? Like, and that second category is really freaking hard to get into. And we hold him to that standard because that's the way he was looked at from the time he got on the field as a freshman at Clemson. And so I think we're seeing a lot of the same things that we saw. We're seeing a lot of the same things that we saw in Justin Herbert early on. It's just the context of it is so much different because our expectations for Herbert weren't the same as they were for Trevor. You know, so I tend to like want to give Trevor a little bit more grace here.
100%.
And say the Jaguars are smart to get in front of this. If I were the Jaguars, I would invest in the guy too. Even if you're changing coaches in a year or two, you know what's going to happen? That coach is going to come in and say, I can fix Trevor Lawrence. That job is going to be attractive because Trevor Lawrence is there.
Sean Payton is going to come in and say, I can fix Trevor Lawrence. How brave of him. But listen, I love that everybody out there. So Trevor Lawrence threw 12 touchdowns and 17 interceptions his rookie year, which, by the way, Peyton Manning threw like 30 interceptions his rookie year. Yeah. So I don't want to hear about any of this. They were 3-14. That was the worst coaching job, no offense, Albert, in the history of the modern NFL era, I would say.
So we still have that over there. So like I'm not taking that banner down right over here. So
okay, yeah, no problem. I mean, Urban Meyer's a great college coach when he's around grown men who fear him and will work extra hard when daddy yells.
It didn't go well.
Doesn't go well.
What do you want from me? I called it the biggest disaster.
Okay. All right. So there you go. From that first year, he goes from 12 touchdowns, 17 picks, 59% completion percentage to a 66 completion percentage, 4,100 yards, 25 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Now, the problem, I think, was really the regression from year two to year three. That worries me, and you have a better receiving core. But if we had...
Did you mention that Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison and Marshall Faulk when he was a rookie, too?
That's ridiculous. I forgot about Marshall Faulk, which is really funny. Yeah. But if you... So if you look at it that way, if we had any other quarterback that was drafted in the first round that went from 3 wins to 9 wins, from 12 touchdowns to 25, from 17 picks to 8, we would be like, okay, we figured it out. It would be exactly what we thought of Jalen Hurts, right? I mean, yeah. Similar to what we thought of Jalen Hurts, and then Jalen Hurts ended up taking them to the Super Bowl. So for me, I mean, Trevor is not the problem, has not been the problem. And, you know, even if he's Matt Stafford, right?
Yeah.
He grows up to be Matt Stafford. You're going to
still going
to
be worth the money.
You want him instead of, yeah. You know, not Matt Stafford, you know? So right. I don't know. Yep. To me, the discourse around that is wild. I think it's more like Trent.
It's because the bar is so freaking high because of how
it's so high. Everybody's a moron, you know, that tries to, not everybody, but people who are trying to account for other people's money and try to understand this, I don't think really take this, you know.
I mean, let me ask you this. Like, would you rather have Trevor Lawrence or Tua Tagovailoa?
Trevor Lawrence.
Would you rather have Trevor Lawrence or Jordan Love?
Trevor Lawrence.
Would you rather have Trevor Lawrence or Dak Prescott?
Trevor Lawrence.
There's your answer. You know what I mean? Like that to me is like, oh! That answer is the, like, so like to me, like those guys are all going to get paid in that range.
The Dak Prescott, you know? One got me though. That was like,
but
like,
Dak's older too.
Dak's like, older. That's the part thing. Of it. Yeah.
You know,
it felt so like that ink blot test.
And, you know? And that's a factor. Now, I would like to see over the next couple of years for the Jaguars to put more around him. Like, you know what would have been a good hire for Doug Peterson this offseason? As like a senior offensive assistant or something? Frank Reich.
Right.
Like, bring in, like go a little above and beyond. Go, like, do a little extra, you know?
I do think that Ryan Nielsen was one of the best hires of the offseason.
Yeah,
I think he will make that defense ferocious. I think he'll unlock Trevon Walker.
Yeah.
But I think you needed... and again, Doug Peterson got into...
And you know what I'm saying, yes. Right? Like, I was just like I think, like, so somebody like Frank Reich, let's just use him, and I'm just using him as an example, but he was with Doug in Philly. Carson Wentz had his best years, right? Like by far, mm-hmm. with Frank Reich there, right? And then Frank Reich worked with Andrew Luck, who was more or less under the same sort like the same set of circumstances in Indianapolis. So Frank's handled that sort of quote unquote prospect before. You know what I mean? Like a guy who had to deal with expectations that way before. I think in a lot of different ways that would have been a really smart thing to do. Now, maybe Doug approached Frank about it or whatever, and they couldn't work it out. I know Frank kind of like, yeah, I know Frank wanted to spend more time with his family and everything else, but I think something like that, like seeing like a little bit more infrastructure around him, and you know, maybe Brian Thomas winds up being a lot better as a rookie than most people would expect for a guy drafted at the bottom of the first round. But they lose Calvin Ridley. The coaching staff is static. I still have some questions there, but I would not under any circumstance right now move off of Trevor Lawrence. So I agree with what they did.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think the fact that we're fighting over whether Trevor Lawrence deserves a contract means, you know, we can take time as NFL media people. And I'm talking about like the people who discuss it on Twitter and on Reddit and stuff. We can take a moment and allow another sport to be the dumbest one for just a little while, right? And like, and I'm not.
Do you want to talk about like Lucas defense?
I want to talk about like, you know. Well, I don't want to talk about, you know, anything that has to do with anything else. You know, like I think about people who have to be in it, in the mix on like this WNBA thing right now, and
oh yeah,
like. That's one of those things where I see...
It's just a powder keg. Like, it's a complete powder. That thing is just...
It's like walking out of an Old West saloon and just seeing a gunfight, and you're just like willingly wanting to just step into the middle of that.
Well, because like, you know the people involved aren't really arguing about Caitlin Clark.
No! But anyway.
You know what I mean? Like,
but anyway, let's not...
We don't need to get into
let's
that.
Not, let's not really get into that. Let's not get into that. Anyway, let them have their moment, because...
Yeah.
Golly, it doesn't seem like that's going away anytime soon. And then we can just all agree that Trevor Lawrence is good, and that in order for him to be really good
quarterback,
the Jaguars have to get a little bit better, you know?
And we'll see where he takes it from here.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's okay.
After 3 years and at 24, 25 years old, it's okay for a guy to be a good quarterback with a chance to get better.
I agree. Let's smarten up, Jaguars fans. Somebody in London told me that once, that his favorite team is the Jaguars because of how dumb we sound when we say it. And then I was like, how do we sound when he says it? And he was English. And then he's like, Jaguars. And I was like, okay. And I was like, Jaguars.
Yeah, it's hard to.
Jaguars does sound better. It's just that we can't, you know.
It's hard to like argue with them though, because like it is their language.
True. We just, you know.
We just stole it.
We just took it and made it sound cooler. Anyway. Yeah.
But not smarter.
Not smarter. No.
British accent. I automatically assume anyone with a British accent is a pretty intelligent person.
Yeah. I would say so. Yeah. All right, Albert. Well, thank you as always for going through and opening, unlocking your mailbag. You actually have a really good conversation with Robert Saul that we did not get to that is on the website, kind of following up on some of our Aaron stuff, but really sort of the backbone of what's going on with this team right now. So I urge everyone to read it. Coming later this week is my 100 bold predictions of the preseason, Albert. 100!
Oh, nice. When's that posting?
I believe it's later this week. Mitch Golich and I are putting on the final touches. It's a banger. I feel pretty good about it. I changed my Super Bowl prediction, and I also continue to soften on the Buccaneers because I got ripped by Joe Bucks fan the other day for our podcast.
Wow. You're like going back in again now.
No. I'm trying to become.
Oh, you're softening. I'm softening. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like
I'm you're getting nicer to them now. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I thought you meant you were going deeper in.
Joe Bucks fan took me to the woodshed. You know, and I like Joe Bucks fan.
Will.
You know.
Yes, he will.
I love Joe Bucks fan. I think we just need to hug it out. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's for another day. That's Albert Breer. I'm Connor Rohr. We'll see you guys next week. Matt and Gilberto coming up Thursday. Enjoy.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, HELP.com today to get 10% off your first month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.